Welcome to the Success in Medicine podcast. I'm Dr. Rajani Katta, author of the best-selling residency match guide, The Successful Match, and creator of the Residency Interview 101 course. This is a special series on the podcast called Energized at Work. We hear so much about burnout in medicine, and it is a real and very challenging problem. That's why I wanted to learn from doctors in all types of specialties who are the opposite of burned out. These are the doctors who are energized by work. I'm looking forward to sharing lessons and secrets from these doctors on this special series. I am so excited to be speaking today with Dr. Terry Ann Samuels. And one of the reasons I wanted to invite her on the podcast today was because I had the opportunity to meet her as she was having an open house for her practice. And I thought it was really fascinating that there's a lot that I don't know about urogynecology. And Dr. Samuels is a board certified urogynecologist and female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgeon. And I think this is a really interesting area that I personally don't know a lot about, that I'd love to learn more. And I think one of the areas that's so interesting is that it's the intersection of multiple fields, gynecology, urology. And Dr. Samuels, I am so excited to learn more about what you do. So welcome today to the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. And I would love to start by just asking you the basics. Can you tell us what a typical work week is like for you?
Right at this point in my career is what I make it.
Yay.
Hey. So I usually have a day of OR, majors, a day of minors, and then clinic for the other days. I'm trying to get into the habit of keeping an admin day. That doesn't always work out so well at the moment, but I'm trying to be very disciplined about that in terms of taking care of the things that needed to run the business. So that's a typical work week. But there's definitely, being on my own, there's increased flexibility. So I kind of do what kind of works. I do have a family and they are demanding, so. We make it work.
Well, tell me a little bit. I'm going to start by delving a little bit deeper into your OR days. So you said you had a day with major procedures and minor procedures. What are the sort of procedures or surgeries that you perform?
So with urogynecology, so just to, the easiest way to understand it is that we kind of call ourselves the quarterback of the pelvic floor, right? There are three holes, front, middle, back, and we kind of quarterback all three. And so there's quite a bit of overlap with some other specialties, but I think the mainstay of the initial, the field initially was kind of prolapse repair and incontinence. And then it's kind of evolved into everything else that comes with pelvic floor. So not only kind of pain, but cosmesis, constipation, there's quite a bit that we do, to tackle the different pathologies. As time has gone by, we started out with mostly major cases, and now we've gone very minimally invasive with a lot of things. So there's a lot of things, when I talk about my major OR day, that's when I got to go to the big boy hospital, okay. Definitively need general anesthesia, occasionally a robot. So that keeps me there. And then for a lot of the minor procedures, some of it can be done in the office. And some of it can be done in an ASC. Some of that is dictated by the insurance and the patient's insurance. We kind of have to be a little bit flexible. They all have different rules.
Okay. And by ASC, you mean ambulatory surgical center?
That's right.
And I'm thinking back to when I was a medical student. And at that time, that was a while ago, at that time, I remember seeing patients in the hospital who had a hysterectomy, and that was major dramatic surgery, big open procedure. And then I remember fast forward a couple decades and laparoscopic procedures. And one of the reasons I found it so interesting to talk to you is that you were going even beyond that and discussing with me some of the non-invasive procedures that you could do for, let's say, urinary incontinence. Can you tell me a little bit about where the field is going in that area?
Oh yeah, I mean, again, I think all fields, all surgical fields, are going towards becoming. The technology's evolved, the interventions, the anesthesia has evolved. So we're all, I think in every surgical field, we are going towards being as minimally invasive as we can. Laparoscopy has been the biggest jump. And then robotics has just taken that a step further. So I do a fair amount of robotic surgery, which is, kind of laparoscopy on steroids. Just, 270 degree hand movement and better visualization. So it allows you to do a little bit more. In terms of things like an example would be incontinence. So, incontinence, we were kind of stuck with PT. And then, we would have. There's PT, and then okay, well, if that doesn't work, then we go on to do we talk about slings, mesh, which happy to do mesh, very versed in it, trained in it, love it for the right patient. In the last 4 years, we've had a hydrophilic filler that's come out of Europe, because we've always bulked the urethra for stress incontinence, but the problem was it didn't last. The equipment was very bulky. It didn't last more than 18 months. So like patients were like, oh, I'm not coming back on your table in every 18 months for the rest of my life. Like, you've got to be kidding me. So now we have a hydrophilic filler that lasts. Now it lasts from 5 to 12 years. So for the average, with almost no downtime. Technically, you could do it in the office. The problem with office is that the insurance hasn't caught up on the reimbursement. So it's at the moment we have to do it in surgical centers, but it's been a game changer for the field. So, those are the things that kind of keep me in that I love about private practice is that it affords me that agility. So when it came, I knew that filler was coming out. I went to an International Urogyn Association meeting. Has to be about 7 years ago. So I knew it was coming. It just wasn't FDA approved. So the moment I had my name in the bucket then, and I was like, oh, this is going to change the game. So when it did come out about 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago, I'm losing track of time because of COVID. Like, I got the first phone call in the US and I was like, that's mine. Like, we have got to do this. So it's exciting.
Wow. So I'm going to pull back for a moment because this is kind of a more general question, but it really relates closely to what you're talking about, which is that in your residency training, maybe you had a little bit of this, but as the technology is advancing so quickly, how are you keeping on top of all of these new techniques that you have to learn about, new techniques that you have to master? And certainly as a surgeon, how do you master that learning curve?
I think it's relying heavily on my training. And having a good evidence-based approach to everything. And so you objectively evaluate. You don't want to, you also you technically don't want to be the first, depending on what the risk stratification is. I mean, you don't want to be the first guy that does it. But I
That's
like
right.
being close to that. I have enough resources and, in terms of mentorship, in terms of, and I also have a master's in clinical research, which I try and use to really evaluate, get as much evidence as I can, test things out, comparing, is it really better than the other method before I do that to any patient. So it is very difficult to keep up, but the it's one of those things that you have to make a commitment to do. Because the technology is moving very quickly. I mean, quicker than, I mean, I've been a doc for 23 years now, and the last 5 years has been this crazy like roller coaster ride and just crazy amounts of technology coming out on the other end. And again, not all of them good, and not all of them, and many of them okay, right? Like it looks good from the business perspective, but really for my patients, we're not doing any better than we did before. So I think it's important to maintain, because you're it's a lifetime university, right? You're going to be, if it continues at this rate, this is going to be an evaluation that you're going to do over and over and over and over again for the rest of your career. So I think it's important that you, I think if I, in retrospect, I mean, I fell into fortunately a good network where I have good mentorship, but I think if I had to do it over again, I would make sure that I start to shore that group up right out of training, right? My people that I know, my people that are good at what they do, my people that are constantly learning, so that we're constantly bouncing things off of each other, and keeping each other on the straight and narrow.
You know, that's a fantastic piece of advice that I don't think people talk about often enough, because you're absolutely right. I think about when I came out of residency, how I was really well trained, but as things change around you that need to be along another group of lifelong learners. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's so critical. And I wanted to ask you a little bit more about, you trained in obstetrics and gynecology. What drew you to the field of female pelvic medicine and reconstructive surgery?
Ooh, good question. delivering a baby at 2 a.m. crying. I was like, oh my God, I can't do this for the rest of my life. No, I mean, I think, you know, again, I have the, you know, and I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be negative about any particular field. I think the issue for me was, I love OBGYN, but I trained in England. My med school was done in England.
Okay.
And in England, and actually in most parts of the world, doctors don't deliver babies, right? They're delivered by the midwife. So, you know, I liked the surgical aspect of it. I liked taking care of women, and I liked being helpful. And I liked, when I was young and fit, I liked the stat. I liked the excitement, right? I like swooping in and saving the day. And so that's how the NHS was set up. You were on call for a week. You dealt with anything the midwife couldn't deal with. You were the backup for them, right? And or you dealt with difficult deliveries, forceps, vacuum, whatever. And then I got here, and I remember starting my residency. And I remember my fourth year resident was like, all right, room two is ready. And I was like, ready for what? She's like, you need to deliver a baby. I was like, that's great. Tell the midwife, have a great time. Like, why are you calling me? And then I went into the room, and then she was like, okay, so you got to push with the patient. And I was like, I got to do what? I was like, total shock. Call my friends in England, and they were like, you're doing what? You're a doctor. You don't deliver babies. I was like, I know.
Wow.
So I fell in line. I mean, I was, you know, fortunate enough to get a residency here, and I was really excited. And I enjoyed it. I mean, to be honest with you, I mean, the midwives were the best teachers that I had when I was at my hospital. We were in the number one birthing hospital in New York. And like, we had more deliveries than most people see in their lifetimes in a month. So, and it was extremely multicultural. I loved my training, but I still attracted to the surgical aspect of it. I had a mentor. And, you know, the thing about me is that, I loved OBGYN. So you really couldn't get rid of me. I think, you know, they were like, oh my God, this resident won't leave me alone. So
that's awesome.
I had a wonderful mentor who I guess he liked my hands. And he said to me, he's like, hey, you know, I really think that you could do well in this Eurogyn. And at that time, we had 22 accredited fellowships. And that's all we had in the country. And
hardly
and he said,
any.
You know, I think you could do this. And I was like, all right, well. And at that time, I hadn't had the rotation yet. So I was like, I mean, it sounds cool, you know. And I don't know, by the grace of God, he said to me, he's like, I'm going to take you to Africa, and we're going to do some fistula repairs. And I was like, whatever. I was like, I'm a 30-year resident. He totally got it done. Like, to get that week off, which, I mean, it was my vacation, but to get it organized and get to let me go. And so we ended up in Kenya, and we did fistula repair for the Pokot tribe for a week and a half, and changed my life. That was it. I was done. I was like, it's your guy or nothing.
Wow. Isn't it amazing how the right mentor at the right time can just open your eyes to possibilities you hadn't imagined for yourself?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow.
Absolutely.
And, going back to obstetrics gynecology, I do want to ask you. So one of the sayings I have is that I love my work, but I don't always love my job. Like, I don't necessarily like prior authorizations and paperwork and stuff. So what is it about your work that you love? And what is it about your job that you don't necessarily love?
You can lock me in a room with a patient. or lock me in the OR with a patient, and I am happy skipping in the field. Before we open the door and have to do notes, I'm like, ah. So it's just unfortunately, it's part of the system, and it needs to get done, and it's the only way that we're going to be able to protect ourselves. And you know, you kind of have to look at my notes as, okay, how am I going to, you know, provide really good individualized care if I don't know what I did last time and I don't plan for my next visit? So that's kind of, I kind of have to trick myself into like, okay, this is really, really important in terms of patient care to get these things done immediately. And then what flows from that is obviously you get your notes done and you get things coded, then that's how you get paid. So, and then that's how you're able to keep your practice open. So, you know, I kind of have to go through that in terms of trying to keep me on the straight and narrow with that aspect of my job. Yes.
Okay. And then I'll ask you, because when you think about obstetrics, gynecology, as a medical student, I mean, you think about the late nights and the overnights and the call. And I know you have young family. So how do you find, what are some of your suggestions or advice for keeping it all together, for making time for what you value as well as your work that you value?
I think the first thing I usually tell young people is like, don't stop using the word balance because it doesn't exist. You know, it's because you fight for it and then you feel like you fail, right? And A-type personalities, I think it just adds to our anxiety. I think life is really more of a juggle. And I think if the plates don't hit the ground, then you really are doing well, right? Because there's some days that you're going to be spinning all 10 of them, and some of them you're going to be catching them with your feet, and that's fine. That's just part of the ebb and flow, right? Yeah. So I think the word balance is a little bit dangerous for physicians especially. And I think it's just kind of making sure that throughout the process that you make sure that you understand your priorities and what's important to you, and making sure that when you have the option of planning, then you make those things happen, right? You know, things like, you know, again, it's hard, right? You can have children in residency, but it's particularly hard in OBGYN, right? Because of the physicality of the work. And it's kind of hard to understand that when you're not in it. But I often tell residents, and it's not, again, as you're going into it, you're eyes wide open, and there's nothing wrong with making a plan. But, you know, you're doing something that you'll get far more out of it, and you'll be able to accomplish more without having children if you don't have to, right? If you have a choice. Because, again, it's work that is totally physical. When you're moving that 400-pound patient, you don't walk away from the table and go, okay, everybody else do it, right? You're there. When you have to clean her butt, you're there, right? Like, there is running, it is a physical job that is so enjoyable and extremely rewarding, but that's a small sacrifice, I think, for the benefits that they get long term. So I think kind of family planning, I think, is important. I think watching balance, and I think keeping in mind the most important aspects, and find someone that has the lifestyle that you want in terms of your mentorship, right? Not only finding someone that practices OBGYN. Okay, that's nice. But you almost want to follow them home. What time do you leave the hospital, right? And you want to know that. And I really encourage people to know that really early in the game. Like, you know, I want to know what you do on day to day. Like, follow somebody in the office, go through that process. And everyone's different. And you might find that you actually love it more because you think, hey, I know that I can do this in 10, 20 years.
I love that piece of advice. And I haven't heard somebody say it exactly the same way you just said it, but that's fantastic. Like, find somebody in your field that has the kind of lifestyle that you want, but also what you just said about, follow them home. What time do they leave the hospital? Like, really understand sort of what are the sacrifices that they've made? How are they putting it all together? I love that, because I think about that in every single field, that there are ways to mold it to what your, to what your goals are. So that's a fantastic piece of advice.
Yeah, no, I think it's, and again, I learned that from the students that I've met, and the ones that have made good decisions and the ones that have made decisions that they regret, is that they just didn't understand at the end of the day what impact this would have on the life they wanted to live. And again, there are so many other benefits from a career, and we have to take into consideration the intangibles. I was having a talk with a medical student that scrubbed in with me the other day, and she was like, OB, all this other stuff, and how it's hard, and then the litigation, and she's like, how do you do it, and blah 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 blah. And I and you know and she was kind of going, and this obviously had rehearsed this thing in her head, and someone had gotten into her head, and I was like, but here's the difference between something like OBGYN and most other fields. It's like, she was working, I think she was at one of our downtown hospitals, and they're clocking babies. I mean, she has done mega volume by a second year resident, right? And
Oh.
I said, look at that. I said, and you've been in med, like in OBGYN for 2 years. Think about your legacy. Think about the number of people who, on the most important day of their life, for the birth of their child, they'll see your face for the rest of their lives. Like, you already have a legacy, right? And like, I get goosebumps thinking about that, right? Like, I saw
Yes.
babies that I've delivered, on Facebook, and now they're adults. And to be a part of that journey is amazing, right? So one
Yes.
cannot, and it keeps people going. So one can't get away from the wonderful intangibles that OBGYN has to offer. So make sure you're aware of all of that when you're looking at your career, the good and the bad.
I love that. I love that. And you're absolutely right. I still remember my OB with my two children. You're right.
Yeah. And you may not
Okay.
even remember her name, but you remember her face, and see, and you're sending her good vibes every single
That's
time you
it.
get to cuddle your little one. So we as OBs get to feel all of that.
That's right. That's so true. There's a lot of good vibes out there in the universe, going back to
Yeah.
those wonderful people who, I have to say, as a medical student, childbirth is scary. Scary. So to be there at that moment. And I wanted to ask you, because you talked about fistula repair, that you had done that as a resident, but I think, are you still involved in medical mission work?
Yes. So we kind of we have a couple of people that we trained with. The Stitch in Time is a group that one of my besties started a nonprofit, and we just kind of, we use our surgical skills. We're trained in the same place. We got together with another group of women who trained similar to the way we do, and we just kind of go rogue, and we find places, and we go and do our thing. We're kind of anti-establishment. Like, we don't want, NGOs, and we kind of want to make sure that the work gets done. So I don't have time for press releases and people, and those are the roadblocks that we've found as we've done more and more of these missions, is that people want to get involved and take credit, and so it
Oh.
requires our time, to meet this person and do that person. But we just want to be in the OR and get the work done. So, we've stuck with the ones, and right now we're in Guatemala, and we're loving it. We go every year. And we kind of go gangbusters in there. We do clinic one day, and then we just operate like fiends for 5 days,
Wow.
for 12 hours a day, and just love it. And it's just great camaraderie. You're doing, the work is just heavenly. And hopefully I'll be able to keep doing it for as long as I can.
Oh, isn't that fantastic? Because I feel like that's the core of what medicine is, right? Like
Oh,
patient to patient,
yeah.
making that direct impact. Oh, that's fantastic that you are
Yeah.
making the time and devoting your energy to this.
Yeah. And I think it's been part of the big push for me to go private, because I now control my time, right? And so I can do this when I want to and how I want to, and I'm not beholden to an institution. So that, I think, when that started to get squeezed out because of the demands at my previous jobs, I think because this is my passion and this is part of my life view, which is what I talked about before, that I was not willing to let that go. This is important to me.
I see that from a lot of physicians about at the end of the day, are you able to practice in a way that's consistent with your values? And for you to be able to design your private practice in a way that allows you to live your values, that's really fantastic. So,
Thanks.
oh, you're welcome. And if you had advice, or what advice would you give for a medical student who was listening, who's considering obstetrics gynecology, or female pelvic and reconstructive surgery as a future field, what advice would you have for them about how to explore the field and then how to succeed in terms of getting into a residency or into a fellowship?
I think, oh, that's that. I mean, we could do a whole segment on that.
Yeah, actually, we really could. We really could. That's true.
yeah,
But give me two sentences. No, I'm kidding.
exactly. Quickly. It's I think medicine and the way I talk about my relationship with medicine is, she's my wife, right? And so you it's like choosing a spouse, right? And you have to make certain decisions that there's no perfect person, but you get all the information that you can to be able to make the best decision for a lifelong partner. And that's what medicine is. You're choosing a lifelong partner. And so I think having trained elsewhere, I think one of the big deficits is that I think medical students here don't get enough time spent working in a specialty. So in England, we are our first year out, we spend 3 months in four different specialties.
Oh.
And that's a requirement for the National Health Service. But by doing that, you at least if you don't even get into one of the rotations that has what you love, at least you're eliminating things that you know that you'll not ever want to do, right?
Right.
And you're working in them. And I think that because that's not here, I've seen many situations where they've fallen in love with the wrong person just because they didn't have all the information. And so I encourage medical students to really make an effort, throughout their medical school career to spend a day with things that they're interested in and spend a really full day with that physician, not necessarily only in the special. So you're in a practice and you're bubbling from patient to patient with, four physicians. That's part of it. But spend some time with one physician and follow them home and don't stalk them. But so you can really understand the specialty and allow yourself to be able to fall in love with it, because I think that's what's going to keep medicine alive. There's a lot of hard parts and challenges to medicine. It is being in love with your specialty, I think, that keeps you going because you understand that intangible. And that's something that you can't get from being a financier on Wall Street and all your MBA friends are making a bazillion more dollars than you. But I sleep so much better and I'm so much happier about the life that I lead because I get the privilege to do this. But I think, again, part of that was because I fell in love with a specialty that was right for me.
Wow, that's a beautiful, beautiful way of putting it, and so true. Well, Dr. Samuels, on behalf of on our audience, I just wanted to say thank you for taking time out of your surgical and clinic schedule to speak with us today. Thank you very much.
No, my pleasure, and thanks so much for having me.